Here we are.
Here we are.
Like the second we start, I just immediately start coughing.
The phlegm comes up. I've been really phlegmy lately. I feel like, yeah, like after I eat dinner now, my body is like, just knows to generate phlegm.
Yeah, my body just loves moistness in general, whether it be on the outside, whether it be moist oil.
Uh-huh. You know. Oh, yeah. I mean, all my crevices are excreting like an oil, or I assume it's like an oil or something.
Yeah.
It's like cod liver oil, kind of.
I like to look at people in the eye when I cough. I don't know if that's polite or impolite. I'm not sure what the
current
implication is, but
yeah.
You know, like a whooping cough.
Stuff. Yeah, you're like really working at it. Like repetitive. You're trying to dislodge that chunk.
Yeah, you're just, and then they hear at that last one, just your mouth fills.
Yeah.
It's, you know, like a quarter of your lungs is filled with this.
Yeah.
This fetid water moistness. I don't know.
Yeah. It's cool when you're like doing that coughing up and then your mouth is kind of open and you like dislodge it so much that it flies right out of your mouth like a big chunk. You know, it's like.
Oh, God. That reminds me of the guy who had hurt himself. He'd fallen off his bike and came to work and he was like, Mira, Mira. And I was like, what? And I was like, you got, and it looked like I could see it was swollen on the side. And it was like a puncture wound.
And then where?
On his arm. And I was like, man, you got to go to the doctor. You know, you're a Mexican dude, no papers. And he's like, I can't. And he just laughs. And then he goes, Mira, Mira, Mira. And then he pushes on it. This is a true story.
No.
And then a pus piece came out.
A solid.
He laughed. It
coagulated.
Oh, I was like, that's not good.
That's good. That's just body's healing. That's white blood cells.
This is going to move down your body. This is going to continue. This isn't going. Yeah.
The infection. Just one day he didn't show up to work. I'm sure he's fine.
He just has the world's record for white blood cells in your body.
Yeah, he has excess white blood cells that he has to wound himself in order to give him something to do. Otherwise, they take over the pus.
Yeah.
Fills up his legs.
Getting hurt. He's like, oh, he moans. He shivers and his eyes turn, I guess, white.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. The pustules, gather.
That is a true story.
And this was at like a restaurant, is that right?
Yeah, it was a pizza place, Mama Sue's. Right. It was Glen Ellyn, Illinois. It was awesome.
Check it out.
And one time I bought beer one day. I was like, we're going to drink beer today. Mama Sue's gone. And we drank a 12-pack. Uh-huh. Yeah, which is a lot of beers for four people, four kids. And one guy was like, one more 12-pack. And I was like, oh, man, we're gonna set fire to the business.
Yeah. Everything turned out fine, though.
Mama Sue's.
Mama Sue never found out.
She wanted to find out. Where is she now?
Still trucking along. Is the place still open?
No, it was closed a long time ago. I picture she got into some sort of, I don't know, politics, wheeling and dealing. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe she works. I don't know. Mama Sue. It's a fun place to work.
How old is she now, you think?
60 something.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. She's still a kid. Sprightly.
She's still a kid. She's still a child in God's eyes.
Yeah. She's one of God's children.
God leans down. He leans down towards her and he's, you know, God's just a man just like you and me. And he starts coughing. He's trying to dislodge. I think that's why everything's going to hell, to shit. Because God has been trying to dislodge something in his lungs.
Yeah. One of those really chunky, coagulated phlegm.
I like to with one arm put my hand over my mouth and then clutch somebody's shoulder as hard as I can and then look at them right in the eye as I do it,
yanking on their shirt collar.
Right. It's kind of like, you know, when they at the Blues Hospice, when they know you're going to go down,
yeah,
they this, the, it's a moving stage. It's a roving stage, and they move the stage with the guy. And you know, the guitar gets louder as they go out.
Yeah, and you have to be on, like, one of the, you have, they always have to have a the blues guitarist on call. Like, you have to, you know, you're basically either living on site at the blues hospice, or you got your beeper, you know, on
I
your...
I mean, if the if the hospice is good, no one's... They're never leaving. They're always there. People are dying.
There's always work to be done.
There's always work. Got another one. Beep. They can hear it down the hall. You know, that kind of blues. The Chicago blues.
Yeah, Chicago blues.
You know? It's like those Clapton lyrics. What did he say? He's like, he says, I have to wear a diabetes sock because your love is so sweet.
Right. He was the true inventor of you know, actual blues.
Right.
There's a bunch of people that kind of, they were like kind of pre-blues, and then he came along and really invented it.
Well, yeah, people really, that was when people talk about, oh, is there, you know, time machines wouldn't exist, you know, reality would have been changed. And people say, well, people think that black people actually learned from Eric Clapton. He took a time machine and taught black people how to play the blues.
Yeah, right. It's sort of like, yeah, the Back to the Future, where he goes back in time and teaches the black people about rock and roll music.
Rock and roll, exactly. And he's like, and then he doesn't have sex with his mom, and it diverts from the fact that he, in the story, they were like, how about we do a movie? That was what that guy wrote the movie. He's like, because I want to do a movie where the white guy invents the rock and roll, teaches the black people.
Yeah. Teaches them. Helps them.
But society's better after that too. When he comes back, when Marty comes back, you notice society's better.
Yeah,
it's a better society because he taught black people the blues. I think that's the moral of the story of the movie.
He goes back in time and in the sequel, and he the fat boys are you know, working as orderlies, and then he like does like a rap at them, and then they're like, what? Like,
yeah,
what's this? You know, she's rhyming over a drum machine, and then the rest is history.
In part four, are they in part four? After everyone's dead.
It's three or four.
It's just the fat boys, for some reason.
The fat boys.
It's like, yeah, it's like Back to the Future 4, starring the fat boys. What? There's no mention of going past or forward into the future.
There's no time machine. There's no the DeLorean. Just the fat boys.
It's just once again they're, you know, assisting on surgeries and dropping pieces of food in the open cavities.
I need to rewatch Disorderlies.
Please stop eating. Please.
In my mind.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen all of it. I remember watching parts of it.
I've seen it. I watched it on VHS tape.
That's like Joy saw it. I saw it.
I shoved it in my VCR.
Right.
Watch the whole thing.
Did they do that?
Yeah, is the human beatbox
really good? I'm gonna go back in time and teach the fat boys how to beatbox.
How to do beatbox?
You know what I mean? What's this white crazy white guy doing?
What the hell's this white boy doing? They never.
That's in Back to the Future 4.
Yeah.
Where all of a sudden, it's just they were doing their own thing, and then all of a sudden, I show up, last 10 minutes of the movie, in a DeLorean.
Just scrambling out of it, start beatboxing at them.
rapping. Like, just like really weird stuff. Talking about 9/11 in the World Trade Center, like, Bush did 9/11, say it! Say it now! You know?
Repeat it.
Man, the fat boys... They knew about 9/11.
That's how they predicted. Before. I mean, people thought it was a coincidence that, you know, all their albums would make reference to the Twin Towers falling.
Right.
But
we even have a song called Bush Did 9/11, but it just seems that people are just like, it's just a coincidence.
It's just a weird coincidence. It must be they're referring to something else.
Yeah. We're gonna go back in time, right? That's the that back then. That's when people would actually write the theme song too. Like, I didn't realize those, I mean, I hate to say it, but like that was like, I grew up in that area and at that same, well, I was young, but those John Hughes movies, like Simple Minds and those bands and the, what's the band? Not Love and Rockets, Psychedelic Furs. You know, they wrote the songs.
They would hire them to be like, here, we're going to do the soundtrack album. And you get to write the theme music that goes over the opening credits,
right,
where you're like, you get like a synopsis of the plot and you have to try and vaguely reference, you know, plot points in the, you know, the verse. They would do like the Fat Boys actually, they did like a Nightmare on Elm Street, like four.
They were, they were.
Yeah. They were
and their whole thing too, was they, during the movie, if you remember it, they were orderlies that, at a place where they were short staffed.
They're so tired. They want to sleep, but they can't.
Yeah. They assisted on some surgeries. Anyway. Yeah.
Freddy Krueger's.
Yeah.
So
we're going to go back in time. But yeah, you and I, we would do our movie, which is, it might be about like a sexy, like a real love story between a pest control a person, mm-hmm, an exterminator, and the person of the house, and we would hire, we would get Clapton to do the, or we would get, who do we get? One of the guys, that guy from ELO or the bass player from Journey, we'll get him.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, okay, cool. And he's like, here's this motif I have, I think, for that runs really good through the song. He plays piano. We're like, no, you're just only playing bass.
the Jefferson Starship bass player, we're gonna get you. You gotta do a synopsis of this plot, this erotic thriller that we wrote about a pest control guy that goes to a house and he sees too much, but then he has a connection to the wife. So maybe she knows more than she lets on, you know, and you gotta sing about it.
Right, you gotta sing about it. But just you and the bass
everywhere. You have a flea problem.
She's a beautiful woman. Just the bass though. And he is a beautiful man. You know, it's a beautiful song. But yeah, and then there's the sex scene where she's spraying him in the face with the chemicals when she's on top of him.
Because, yeah, it's not good for you, but it does give you, it makes you tingle a little bit, makes the blood flow, you know what I mean?
He's clearly in pain, but.
It's erotic pain.
It is.
Which makes it good.
Erotic pain. That's the name of the movie.
Erotic pain.
Erotic pain.
I would go see that movie.
That is a bold name. It's called Erotic Pain. Do you want to be in my movie? You'll be the main character.
We've been on a kick where we're kind of trying to make our way through like every 90s erotic thriller because they're good, usually. And I would scramble to see a movie called Erotic Pain.
Yeah. Right.
You gotta make it.
Erotic Pain. I've been watching a bunch of Hitchcock.
Oh yeah, like what era? All of it?
I've been watching. Well, so far I've seen North by Northwest and Birds.
Yeah, the primo era.
I've seen a lot of them, I guess.
Yeah,
but Birds, man, I forgot. I hadn't seen Birds since I was a kid, and that movie in my brain was just sort of like, oh, it's you know, whatever. It's Birds. Like, you can't really get. It's not. And it's not scary, really. But
no.
The way that it's filmed is so cool.
Yeah.
And there is just this level of dread throughout the movie, especially the end. Like, the middle towards the end, it's just like, oh, boy. Like, because it's just like, they do it so well. They film it so well. They have all these birds just sitting there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And And it's just like, and to spoil, not to spoil it, but you don't know why they're there or what, you know what I mean? And it's like, and it's just like dreadful. And then by the end of the movie, at the end, there's no resolve, that nothing happens. They just leave and it's like spreading, you know?
Yeah. Like, what the fuck? The birds are just going to get everybody now.
But it's just, it's done really well, you know?
Yeah.
And there's this really great scene where Cary Grant just, you know, he's, you know, they're hiding in this house and he's really hungry and he has to eat and prepare a dog.
Right.
It's just a, such a crazy, really cool scene.
Well, they'd never done that before. Like, no. It's, you know, in the Guinness Book of World Records, the first time the cooking a dog on film.
Cary Grant.
And they didn't have like the, you know, like in movies they say like no animals were harmed, you know, they have like the protection agency or whatever. This was before that, so they could kind of get away with a little bit more than the old good old days.
Right.
They could just take a dog. Well,
we're going back to that. I like that. Having the children, we're gonna
child labor.
Children can now work in the coal mines and
get them in there. Better than me.
You know,
I need my coal. Give me my coal. Get it out of that hole for me.
Make me some shoes. Yeah. Go down in that basement and make me some shoes.
You know? I want a coal mine sweatshop combo.
Right.
It's like a KFC Taco Bell kind of thing.
Yeah, I want somebody to have to write what's the book about the hideous Chicago meat factories?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Somebody's gonna have to write that book again.
Part two, the jungle.
Like, and a child fell into the meat pit and was never found.
I don't think I've ever actually read The Jungle. When I was in, we read it in school, but we could choose.
I was gonna say we did it in school, but I don't remember. I think we only read parts of it for some reason.
If I remember correctly, we got to choose between The Jungle and The Alienist, which was about like a serial killer in Chicago,
right?
I think who was like mutilating child prostitutes. Mm. A good book for 17-year-old or 14-year-old boys to read. But so I read that one instead. I read The Alienist. So I just know, you know, I know there's like cool stuff about all the meat and how good the meat is in The Jungle.
Yeah. I mean, that's half the book. It's just make your mouth drool. You're reading it and you're just like, oh, I'm so hungry for this meat. Welcome to the jungle. That's what that song's about. It's like, we got fun and games. It's about child labor laws. Guns N' Roses were ahead of their time. I was explaining why my son is going to maybe get drum lessons from the guy. Well, I don't know. I'm going to ask him, but. Apparently he does drum lessons, but the guy, the drummer from Fear, who is coincidentally like one of the best prog math rock, he plays in that band Nasal Rod, and his drumming is insane. It's absurd how good it is.
Nice.
But anyway, yeah. he's in the band Fear, you know.
You have to live with the consequences of having a young boy drummer in your household.
Right. Yeah, but I don't know why I'm talking about this. Getting my son to play. He's gonna
child labor. Exploit him.
Yeah. Welcome to the. Oh, but I was telling him that he was in a band called. He still is in a band called Fear. They're a famous punk rock band. And then he's like, who's more famous, Guns N' Roses or Fear? And I was like, Guns N' Roses. And then I was like, coincidentally, I was like, Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses was in a hardcore band called The Farts. In Seattle, and they played. I'm sure they played with Fear. They were like contemporaries.
Yeah, my buddies in Seattle, they're cousins with him, with Duff, because he was a Seattle boy.
And then they went on to be one of the guys. I think went on the main guy went into be in the band that band, The Accused, which were like, you know, another band that the people just be like they were in the petri dish of grunge. They started grunge because they were like, you know, post thrash, you know, like that thrash that was sort of more mosh.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Like pre-Biohazard, like it either went Biohazard or it went, you know, doom or grunge.
Which way, modern man?
Welcome.
Well, what are you going to do? I just started reading a book about SF punk, like the pre-Dead Kennedys, like the band Crime and Negative Trend, Crime. And all those guys.
Crime is cool, man. Crime. Have you seen that? Everyone needs to right now go and watch, go on YouTube and type crime playing a prison. It's amazing. they dress as cops.
As cops. That was like their whole shtick. So good.
And they're just like, doing the thing. And the people are just like,
They don't know how to play their instruments. It's like, it's just, they're like,
but yeah, they were cool. Their crime was really cool, man. Because they were like, they had more of a New York sound or something. But like, you know, they were like, you know, Sonic Youth covers them, but they had a sort of noisy drone. There wasn't, I guess, in like Sonic Youth, they had their own version of like a little bit of Velvet Underground or something, even though it was more like rock and roll.
Yeah. I guess it was like the same, it's kind of the same time, just the other side of the country.
But yeah, Crime's cool. But yeah, what other bands?
I don't know, just tons of basically the Avengers and whole scene of the SF.
What was the club? The Mabuhay Gardens.
Yeah, the Mabuhay Gardens. It was like a Filipino dinner club that the punks took over and turned it into a punk venue.
That's cool. And you got huge book. That zine out there, what's the guy's
name? Oh yeah, Search and Destroy. It's he was in some of these bands, like the I don't know if he was ever like on albums that got recorded, but he used to play in those punk bands back then. Vale.
Yeah.
Search and Destroy guy. He worked at City Lights.
Yeah. Yeah. Every city had their like one band, like one or two band, like Dead Kennedys in San Francisco. And
yeah,
you know, I'm trying to think. The funny thing is the New York one came late. Like it was like, what was the New York, like crazy hardcore punk, good punk. I guess you wouldn't say that they were from New York. Bad Brains aren't from New York. They're from DC.
Yeah.
They moved to New York. So what was that? You know, people would be like, Agnostic Front or something. And it's just like, I love that first Agnostic Front record, Victim of Pain, but it is far below a Dead Kennedys or a Minor Threat or, Black Flag or anything.
Yeah, it's weird. It's interesting reading the book and just like how different just to think of SF as like having that scene.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess there's still like punks that clinging to it, keeping a scene going here, but it's just cool to read about how thriving it is. But the book is kind of like a, you know, Please Kill Me style, where it's like a bunch of quotes from different people that were in the scene at the time and stuff. But
that's the best. That's the best way. I just read this one about the City Gardens in Trenton, New Jersey, and it's like a book that you just normally wouldn't, like, why would I want to read about a club in the middle of nowhere? Mm-hmm. You know, it was an hour from, but every band played there and they got everyone to talk about it, and it was just like a weird notorious club because it was in the middle of nowhere, New Jersey, sort of. And it's just such a great book. It's just incredible. It's so nice. Fun. It's like everyone, Butthole Surfers, every punk band, and then it goes into the 90s before it fizzled out. Like, you know, they talked to whatever bands, I didn't care, but a lot of like that New York City hardcore bands at the end, and, you know, bands like the grunge bands.
Yep.
But, you know, pre-internet stuff, it's fun to read about, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's cool. Well, yeah. Like that Search and Destroy guy, like there was no internet. And so people relied on these weird zines to hear about stuff. Like, we couldn't even hear the music, but you'd like get the magazine, the zine, and read about it. Yeah. And then like try and find the 7-inch or whatever, if you could.
Yeah. I mean, Illinois, when I was 16, you know, 1990 and 1991, we had those research magazines. They sold them everywhere.
Oh yeah, totally. I remember seeing them in Seattle when I was a kid.
But it's cool that people would just like look at like that, reading about like Jandek when he first started doing his thing. All he did was put his ad in the back of a Maximum Rock and Roll. And
every time,
like 1 year, like for the first 3 years, it would be like two records, just like buy my record with a weird, and then like, and then by after like 10 years or whatever, it was up to like, you know, 100 a year.
That's pretty good. Better than I ever did.
And just like, that's the way you do it. And you just have to take a chance. And you'd look at that album cover and just be like, You know, like I would do it. I would look at album covers and just be like, all right, this is, looks cool. Like,
it's, oh yeah, me I'm too. Like, oh,
and it turns out it's Corrosion of Conformity, Animosity. That's a cool record.
Just buying shit based on what the record looks like.
Yeah.
I bought that Don Caballero record, What Burns Never Returns, because of that. That was, I think, my best blind purchase. It's like one of my favorite records still.
The first one I wanted to buy was the Queen record. I remember seeing it in the store with the dudes like on the robot's hand, dead. Uh-huh. And I was like, I want to get this. And my dad was like, I don't know that you're going to like this. I don't think this is for you. And then I was like, it's probably because, you know, it looked heavy metal. Maybe he thought it would be too much. And then I was like, no, probably because the band's name was Queen and he was worried about homosexual.
It's going to poison your brain, turn you gay.
He just hears the music. It's like, da, 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 da. And then all of a sudden he just as loud as the stereo, turn gay now, turn gay now.
They're like, yes, master, I will turn gay. I have become gay.
He wouldn't have, it couldn't have been, he wouldn't have cared. He wouldn't have cared.
Yeah. Go ahead, son.
Not because he was like anti-bigot. It's just like, it's just something that wouldn't have bothered him. It's just not something he cared about.
He's got bigger fish to fry.
He would make fun of me. He would laugh about it.
Yeah.
But he got bigger fish to fry, exactly. Like torturing my sisters.
Yeah. You know, doing.
Making them feel real small. No, I don't know. No, that's not true. My father was not that bad.
Tainting the legacy of your father in his twilight years.
Yeah, exactly. For no reason. Wow, his father was a monster. He starts getting, he's like, why are people are sending me stuff in the mail? Weird. We only have 20 Patreons.
Yeah, Patreon. Speaking of which, go to patreon.com/heavybreather.
Welcome to the jungle.
Welcome to the jungle, buddies.
All right, let's be done.
That's it. Goodbye.
Goodbye. We'll see you next week.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Set the straight man.